Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.
You are Locked On Packers, your daily Green Bay Packers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax. We're going to be okay.
It is time.
I feel like we can run the table. We're going to do it.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for SB Nation. I cover the NFL for FanRag Sports, and you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. I encourage you to do that. We're going to be switching platforms soon from Audio Boom to Panoply and Megaphone, and so it's not going to change anything for you in terms of where you get the podcast. You're not going to be able to go to the Audio Boom website. So if you use the app or the website to listen to the podcast, you're not going to be able to do that. Starting very soon, you can go to Locked On Packers and we will be pulling the feed there just like we always do. But anywhere you get your podcast, Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, there's a bunch of Android apps that you can use to get your podcasts. It's all going to be there. The RSS feed is all going to be there. All the old episodes are going to be there. We're just changing basically the supplier for us. It is more about us trying to reach new and broader audiences, us trying to, frankly, better monetize the audience that we have. And let me take this opportunity again to thank all of you for being part of that audience. It means a lot to me that you're willing to spend the time with me every day. Because trust me, there are plenty of days where I don't want to spend 20 minutes with me. So I appreciate you guys doing it because it really is a labor of love for me and for all the people that are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Some of the highest rated sports podcasts out there are on the Locked On Podcast Network. And in fact, Locked On Bucks is one of the highest rated NBA podcasts you can listen to. So if you're not listening to it, you should. Giannis Antetokounmpo is an MVP candidate. The Bucks are a legitimate playoff team, especially in the East. So, but this is a Packers show. We're going to talk about the Packers. Michelle Bruton from Cheesehead TV and Bleacher Report returns, makes her triumphant return to Locked On Packers, our first return guest, also our first guest. So there is some symmetry there. The bye week, we had her on before the season, and now we're going to be able to talk about some actual NFL football, which is great. Also, tomorrow, for Opponent Wednesday, since there is no opponent, we're going to do a little self-scout. Mike McCarthy said on Monday that's what this week is going to be for, to self-scout, to figure out what the tendencies are and how they can get better as a team. Mike McCarthy is tremendous coming off a bye, and generally this team plays better after byes, not just for that week, but down the line. And so Ben is going to bring his unique expertise to the show. He was also one of our first guests. We talked after the Seahawks game, and he always has great insight to share. Not a lot of news coming out of the Saints game. The Packers escaped relatively healthy. No major setbacks, it seems like, for the contributors who return to health. And we hope coming out of the bye, there's a possibility Lane Taylor could return, Morgan Burnett. We don't know how serious that soft tissue injury is. He still has not practiced even a little. But the hope would be that he could come back. That would be a huge boost for them.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Normally I would give you a whole long preamble, but Michelle and I, we talked last night, we went long, and I want to give you as much of that interview as possible without making the podcast too long. So let's get to Michelle and that conversation. Michelle, you were the first guest on Locked On Packers, and now you are the first returning guest on Locked On Packers. Thank you for both.
The OG. Thank you for having me back.
Officially a friend of the podcast.
Great.
I appreciate that. So, unfortunately, not the best of circumstances to have you on, because a lot has changed since the last time we chatted in August, the halcyon days of when Green Bay was a Super Bowl contender. Not so much after Sunday. There's a lot, I think, to process from what happened in the Saints game. What was your sort of top line takeaway?
So I, you know, wisely or not, shared this on Twitter, which has been a landmine the last couple of weeks, as you can imagine.
Yes.
But, you know, my feeling in the first half of the game, I saw some people who were really excited. It was great that the defense put itself in position to make some plays. But my feeling that whole half was, listen, this isn't the Packers winning the game so much as it's the Saints losing the game. The Saints were just making really dumb mistakes. And the Packers, sure, they were taking advantage of them. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I wasn't seeing a lot, except for that first drive, which is one of my favorite drives I've seen all year. But putting that aside, you know, I wasn't seeing a lot to convince me from that Packers offense. And sure enough, in the second half, it all kind of went downhill. So, you know, it's still early. These guys still need time to gel. Brett Hundley still needs time to kind of learn everything. I'm not shocked by the outcome. It's pretty close to what I predicted in my prediction for Cheesehead TV last week. Obviously, though, understand that it was a really kind of disappointing start to the Brett Hundley era for a lot of folks.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because I was spent all week talking about how I thought Brett Hundley was going to play well.
Same.
I think there was a sentiment. I mean, this was widely reported. We're talking about from me to around the biggest names in NFL reporting. Adam Schefter went on ESPN and said there's a sentiment around the league Brett Hundley is going to play well, and he didn't. And so I guess what I'm trying to parse, and we're not going to find out until at least Detroit, but probably further down the line, is how much of that was a bad game plan, how much of it was jitters, how much of it was the field. You know, I don't know where we go from here in terms of assessing Brett Hundley's play.
Right. And I was sort of touching on that today on Twitter a little bit too, just sort of saying that it almost felt like a chicken and egg situation because, yeah, we didn't see a lot out of Brett Hundley in the passing game. He went 0-for-4 on his attempts of 15 yards or more. But at the same time, the game plan really was not set up at all. I mean, he, I think, threw the ball two times in the first three drives. They obviously really wanted to keep the ball on the ground. They didn't want to open it up to interceptions. They really wanted to protect the football. And I get that. You know, I think a lot of teams are doing right now. You're seeing that happen in Chicago. Mitch Trubisky threw seven times, which is insane.
Yep. As many completions as they had sacks.
Yeah, right. And you're seeing the same thing happen in Jacksonville. They don't want Blake Bortles really touching that ball. So I get it. Oh, it's God. Something that a lot of teams are doing right now, but I think at the same time, we almost need to just let Brett Hundley do what he's going to do and figure out who he is quick so Mike McCarthy can kind of set about working with him and fixing that. You can't kind of handcuff him forever. And so this might have been
a nice game
to do that, yeah.
And I understand that when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt against Minnesota and Brett Hundley goes in, that they have a game plan for Aaron Rodgers and not Brett Hundley.
Right.
But to have an extra week to prepare and send Brett Hundley out there after watching, I mean, I understand he threw three interceptions. One of them, I think at the end, certainly not his fault. Right. He's getting destroyed. But two of them were also just terrific plays. Both, you know, two other one-handed interceptions. The Harrison Smith one was outrageous. But he looked comfortable making throws all over the field, to the boundary, deep down the field. And it was like McCarthy didn't even take into account what he saw in that game. And all of a sudden, we're going to put Aaron Ripkowski in the game every play, mm-hmm. or we're going to have two tight ends every play. And the Saints were just like, okay, well, then we're going to drop seven and we dare you to beat us.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, Mike McCarthy almost needed to take a look at that amazing Twitter thread that Justice Mosqueda did last week, where he went down and created GIFs of every single play that Brett Hundley had outside the numbers. And there were some beautiful throws in there. I mean, there was one to his right to Davante Adams that, to be honest, you wouldn't be mistaken if you had just turned on the TV at that exact moment and been like, oh, look, there's Aaron Rodgers, not knowing anything that had come before the injury. He looked really good on some of those throws. And so I was sort of excited to see more of that against the Saints, especially when they had the opportunity to create a more balanced game plan and not sort of have being down or have the score dictate what they were going to do. But then we saw what we saw. And, you know, I think that Mike McCarthy is obviously really excited about the development of Aaron Jones, as he should be, as everyone should be. And you do want to kind of ride that. But you don't want to get to a point where you are sort of deliberately handcuffing your offense. And that's sort of what we saw, I think.
Yeah, there were a lot of pictures after the game in the Acme Packing Company Slack of photoshopped Mike McCarthy heads on dads and Brett Hundley on sons on bikes with training wheels. Because that seemed to be what this was, the training wheels offense. And it was that's why, I mean, that's why I use the Vikings example, because he didn't play with training wheels in that game. And he made impressive throws. Now, I will say, after going back and watch, and I didn't think he played as bad. When I saw the stats after the game, I watched this game at a bar. I had friends in town, and I was half on the clock. I looked at the stats, and I thought, really? They were that bad? I didn't think they were as bad as the numbers indicated. And after watching again, I still don't think that they were that bad. Or at least as bad as the numbers say that they were. What was your general takeaway from what you saw from Brett Hundley?
Yeah, you know, I sort of agree with you. I'm doing a lot of like general NFL stuff this year as well as Packers stuff. So sometimes I have to switch around. So I didn't sit down. I didn't get to see it from beginning to end live. I had to kind of go back and rewatch some of the parts. And I was honestly shocked by the end of the game that I realized he only threw for 87 yards. In my mind, it like had to have been at least 125, 150. But no, it was 87. Even though he attempted 25 passes, he only averaged 3.5 yards per attempt, which is obviously heinous. But again, some of that is his fault. He sure could have upped those numbers if he had made any of those four attempts of 15 yards or more that he went 0 for 4 on, like we talked about. But at the same time, Mike McCarthy didn't want him to do that. That's not what Mike McCarthy was looking for from him. What Mike McCarthy did want him to do, I think, was kind of use backfield screens. And then, you know, I think there were a few plays that you could tell were design scrambles in there. But I think that's the other issue early on with Brett Hundley, is that he likes to bolt. And bolting is great when it leads to things like the touchdown. Although, dear God, when he lowered his shoulder, I was screaming.
Don't
internally,
do that.
Don't do it. But at the same time, he needs to develop his presence as a pocket passer. He needs to learn how to scan the field and go through his progressions. He can't just bolt whenever he feels a little bit of pressure. And I think that's sort of what he was doing.
I think it's also worth pointing out here that David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga are clearly not healthy.
Yes.
Because that strip sack, you have your two best offensive linemen are the ones that couldn't hold their blocks on the strip sack. And obviously the Packers were able to recover, but that's a huge play. Now you're behind the sticks. And that's what happened in the second half. The Packers consistently, there was a drive with the penalty. There was a drive with the sack fumble. they got behind the sticks, and you expect Aaron Rodgers can pick up third and 14. Brett Hundley, they called a lot of conservative stuff for him on those downs. I think at a certain point, and Mike McCarthy did not echo this in his press conference on Monday, he basically said the playbook is going to shrink, not expand. They have to take the training wheels off. And the drive that you mentioned earlier, and I'm writing about it this week for Acme Packing Company, the drive where that ended in the Brett Hundley scramble touchdown was awesome. It was awesome. And there was creativity in it, and there was a play in particular that I want to break down in a little bit more detail, but that I guarantee they're going to go back to. And I watched it and I went, why not more this? Yeah. And that has to be on McCarthy. And I think that's why he took the responsibility after the game. He was obviously heated with himself. I mean, I think he holds himself to a higher standard, and he didn't meet it on Sunday.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I've been sort of espousing to anyone who listened this year about how brilliant I've truly thought the play calling and the offensive scheme has looked this year. And I loved what Aaron Rodgers said when he was like, listen, at a point when we're in the red zone, I know it's going to be a touchdown before it happens. I just know. Obviously, you lose a lot of that with Rodgers being out. But, you know, if McCarthy can just use Hundley to his strengths and then help him use the weapons that are in place around him, that I think McCarthy has really nailed their strengths this year and really nailed how to use them in this offense, especially Devontae Adams. You know, you can't get those guys involved if you're not throwing the ball. And so as great as Aaron Jones looked, he can't maximize the game, you know, unless you use the run to set up the pass, which I think is something they can really do now. That's not, you know, you need to get Nelson and Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb involved. And they just weren't really able to do that.
Let's talk about Aaron Jones for a second, because obviously he is developing into a player that they haven't had. I mean, really, even if you include the peak Lacy, he was not the kind of versatile back that Aaron Jones was, and certainly not the kind of big play threat that Aaron Jones is. This adds a dimension to this offense. So rather than, you know, address that directly, what do we do with Ty Montgomery now? What is his role in this offense?
Yeah, that's what I'm writing about for Cheesehead TV this week, so I don't want to give away all of my secrets, but I've been thinking about that all day. And
at least we're on the same page.
Yeah. but I am someone who was really on board with converting Montgomery to a running back. I think he's built like a running back. So he's always wanted to play running back. He clearly was very satisfied and invigorated by this change, and I was really all for it. But what we've seen from Montgomery, whether it was when he was carrying the ball as a when he was still a receiver, or since he's been a converted running back, it's he's never been a big yards after contact guy, and he's never really been a big average guy. Like he's not averaging 5 yards a carry. And so I think that I'm not necessarily giving up on it or saying I was wrong or saying McCarthy was wrong, but in some ways, I think you've kind of got a win-win situation now with Jones and Montgomery, because you can use each of them to their respective strengths. I mean, Jones is someone who he averaged 7.7 yards per carry, which is insane. And he had, I think, almost four.
That's college numbers.
Yeah.
That's like what Bryce Love is doing at Stanford. It's wild.
Yeah. And like we were talking about, this wasn't an offensive line at its best at all. So he was able to do that with a banged up offensive line. And then he's getting, I think it was like 3.3, it was almost 4 yards after contact, which is huge. He's got that great little spin move. So let him do that and let Montgomery just be your kind of backfield screens, your receiver out of the backfield guy. Truly, they've got...
Jones turned more than one run on Sunday. That was a negative play into a positive play.
Yes, absolutely. And they've got a true 1-2 punch now. And so Hundley's job isn't going to be easy, but with the way Aaron Jones and Ty Montgomery can be used, you kind of have to start respecting that and putting some defenders down in the box. And then there's Hundley's opportunity to actually push it downfield a little bit.
We have to talk about the defense. And that has been a popular punching bag for, five, six, 7 years.
Forever.
Where are you on the Dom Capers train?
So I really liked the piece you wrote for Acme Packing Company that went up today about Capers and about how basically he almost seems like he doesn't know what to do with himself now that he has all of this talent and this athleticism and this speed. We all saw in the jersey that the Packers just kind of totally targeted, especially speed, like they've never really had in the Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers era. They've got these great athletes, and it's funny because, like, Ted Thompson's job is done then. Ted Thompson, we can all say, I think, hasn't necessarily been brilliant in his high off or his high defensive draft selections, but, you know, when he does hit on them, they tend to be pretty good, and then it's just execution, and it's, okay, well, here they are, do something with them. And so we see guys who are whose natural athleticism is on display, whether it's Demarius Randall and his three interceptions, or HaHa Clinton Dix. But at the same time, you need them to still have those fundamentals, and you need them to do their jobs and stick to their assignments. And you almost, I mean, you love those big plays, but you'd almost kind of set those to the side if you could just get guys who are taking good angles on their tackles and wrapping people up and, you know, excelling in man coverage. And you'd almost prefer that to, you know, getting a couple lucky picks or takeaways per game. And so I love the athleticism, the raw talent that's there, but I'm not really loving the discipline or the execution. And I think, you know, Capers can't play for them, but he can certainly, I think, get them to be more disciplined than they seem to be right now.
Michelle, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot. What, over the course of Dom Capers' career in Green Bay, what is the signature of a Dom Capers defense? What do Dom Capers defenses do well with the Packers?
Blitzing, I would say. Obviously, it's not Blitzburg.
Like they do it a lot, but are they good at it?
The thing I've always really liked about Dom Capers is his creativity. And I think, especially up front, I think Dom Capers is a much better, in my opinion, front seven coordinator than he is a secondary coordinator. And I love the nitro package. I love the elephant. I love the psycho. I love NASCAR. yeah. But, you know, so he can win up front. I don't know that I have ever really loved what he does with his corners. I think he does some fun things with the safeties, especially when he brings them down as the linebacker. And we saw that all the way back with Charles Woodson. But I think sort of the Packers, regardless of personnel, you know, you saw Tremont Williams, Sam Shields. Sure, they had some success, but I've never really loved his scheme when it comes to coverages, zone coverage and man coverage and sort of anything he wants to do. And that is definitely something that seems to leak outside the realm of execution because it's gone on for a lot of years with a lot of different players.
Well, so here's what I sort of meant it rhetorically, and that's my fault for asking it that way. But I guess my point in all of this, and you actually sort of ended up answering it perfectly, because what you said is not a skill. Because they're not a great blitzing team. When they blitz, it doesn't necessarily translate into sacks, although they are pretty consistently in the top 10 to 12 in adjusted sack rate. But my point is, I don't know what they're trying to do. And I don't know what they want to look like. And mm-hmm. Ted Thompson is bringing, and this is why I wrote the article, and thank you for bringing it up, and your check is in the mail. But I just don't understand what they want to be and what they want to do. And this is why I think I brought up the untalented defensive backs that have held this offense in check. And it's like Kevin King is really talented and he is undisciplined. Demarius Randall is really talented and he is undisciplined. Josh Jones is really talented. He doesn't have a clue where he has to be on the field half the time. But you know how you make that easy? Say, that's a guy, you're going to cover him until the whistle blows, and then after. Follow him to his car if you have to. That makes it really easy on young players. And I just, I think ultimately it does fall on Mike McCarthy to say, hey, Dom, we got to get this figured out, and we got to do something else. We have to get this changed, we have to get it fixed, because what you're doing is not good enough. And I'm not in the Fire Capers camp yet this year. I have been in that camp before in other years, to be sure. But I just like, you can win with this defense. Don't tell me if the Patriots can shut down the Falcons without Eric Rowe and Stephon Gilmore and no pass rush that the Packers can't play good defense. Give me a break.
Right. And I think,
sorry, end rant, soapbox off.
No, but you're right. And to me, I think the thing, because again, I'm always big on, you can't punish Capers for failure to execute. You know, at a certain point, it's on the players. You have to be able to differentiate scheme versus execution. At the same time, things like the 10 men on the field, oh boy, that is, I mean, Capers deserves, you know, all of the ire that's directed his way for that. Because that, I mean, on that second one, you know, you potentially, it cost them the touchdown. And you never want to see 10 players on the field on defense. I mean, that's crazy. And it happened multiple times against the Saints. And I put that on Capers for sure. You know, I know that he wants the substitute personnel. I really like the different looks that the Packers can have with those substitutions, but you can't botch it. You can't put yourself in a worse position than you were a play before. And he did that a couple times.
Okay, so I'm gonna let you go after this. So we are 1 week into the Brett Hundley experience, and I have purposely not asked you about a particular quarterback that is currently on the Packers roster, but not on the active roster. So I want to ask you your optimism level for the next 7 to 10 weeks, depending on how things go.
So,
not on Brett Hundley specifically, yeah, but the Packers overall.
Yeah. So I think that I have kind of developed a reputation over the last week or so for being kind of the voice of positivity and the voice of reason on Twitter about all this. And listen, it's not that I'm blindly, you know, putting all my faith in Brett Hundley and that I think the Packers will finish even 10-6, because I don't necessarily know that they will. At the same time, I think that, you know, we live in an era with Twitter, with Postmates, with whatever, of instant gratification. And, you know, anything you want is right there whenever you want it. And unfortunately, that's just not the way football works. And Brett Hundley isn't going to come out and, you know, put up, you know, 30 points in his first week starting. He's just not going to. And so I think people just need to have realistic expectations for how this season's going to look. I mean, it could very well be an 8-8 season. In some ways, it could still be enough to get the Packers into the playoffs, because who knows what's going on in the NFC. Besides the Eagles, I don't see anything convincing from anybody. So I think that...
That's what makes this so frustrating, though, right?
I hate the
hypothetical, and I damn it, I promised myself I wasn't gonna say this. I was even gonna write an article that was like, don't do this to yourself.
Yeah.
But isn't it so hard to just say, God, this was the, I mean, no one is good this year, yeah, and we have the best player on the planet. We can win the Super Bowl, and to have that just like unceremoniously ripped away it's gutting. Okay. And I'm so glad that you have been a voice of positivity, because I have tried to be the voice of positivity. I genuinely supported Brett Hundley. I thought he was a really good player. I think he's really talented. And I believed Mike McCarthy when he said he's my guy. I was optimistic. I remain optimistic about this team. And I don't know if it says more about you and I than it does about the Packers, but you know, like I'm still here for this.
Right. And I think that at the end of the day, this is a pretty divisive thing, and not a lot of people agree with this, and that's totally fine. And I hope that if people listen to this and get angry, they will share their thoughts with me. I always welcome that. But it's very, very hard to get top caliber talent when your draft pick is, you know, 28th, 27th, 30th, 31st. And the Packers have finished in terms of draft position in the bottom of the round for years. And so if the worst case scenario that comes out of this season is that the Packers miss the playoffs and they get a pretty nice draft pick and can bring in a real difference maker for Aaron Rodgers in the offense next year, or the defense, you know, that's not necessarily the absolute worst situation to be in. I know, you know, people don't like to hear that. People don't want to lose. People want to make the playoffs. But I'm not sure this is a team. Sure, the Cowboys and the Seahawks and the Panthers are all looking fluky. And who knows what this also fluky Packers team could do if it finds itself in the playoffs. But at the same time, I just don't think people have the perspective to realize how incredible it is that the Packers are in the playoffs every year and how many teams would kill to be in that position. And, you know, I mean, yes, this was a year that looked like it could have been really promising to make a run to go all the way, but you still have Aaron Rodgers and you still have 3, 4, 5, however many years he feels like he has left. So by no means was this their last shot. They'll certainly have more shots.
The Patriots have ruined NFL fan bases a lot. They really have. You know, the thing about the Warriors, if, you know, Mark Jackson said Steph Curry is ruining the NBA or whatever he said.
Yeah.
The Patriots really have ruined it for fan bases because they expect their team to be in the playoffs every year, which the Patriots are. And the Patriots seriously have been in the Super Bowl every other year, basically, in Tom Brady's career. Like, right. I think
that's
he's played 14 seasons and they've been to 7 Super Bowls. That is hashtag this is not normal.
Right. And the Packers aren't, I mean, sure, they haven't, you know, they've only had the one Super Bowl and that's kind of the monkey on everyone's backs. But what they do is also really not normal. I mean, this is the cream of the NFC.
One Super Bowl and they're pissed. Imagine how the Lions would feel for one Super Bowl, or the Vikings would feel for one Super Bowl, the Bears would feel for one Super Bowl. I mean, like, this is where we are with this team, and I talked about it with Kevin Seifert the other week. Like, Packer fans are spoiled, and I don't even mean that in a bad way. Just, like, understand you're spoiled. We talk about privilege, right? The Packers have quarterback privilege. Packers fans do.
Right.
We're talking about 25-plus years of Hall of Fame-level quarterback play.
Right. And there are so many things you can take away from this season that have nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers or Brett Hundley. I mean, we have Aaron Jones coming into his own, establishing himself as a number one running back. We have Ty Montgomery figuring out how he's going to be most effective as a weapon. We have a young defense that's cementing itself and trying to establish, you know, balancing playmakers
Kenny Clark.
Right. Look at Kenny Clark. I mean, there's so much to watch this season. And if sort of just look at it as like a summer league, or like, you know, look at the development of these players as they prepare to put it all together in the next year or two, whatever. It doesn't necessarily have to happen this year. And I think that's okay. I know a lot of people expected it to, and I truly do. I'm sorry. I feel badly.
I feel badly
that their hopes are crushed, but I'm very big. And I think, you know, it's not fair because we're, at the end of the day, we're media, we're analysts, we're not really fans. And so, you know, the way I felt personally when Gordon Hayward's leg shattered as a Celtics fan, I mean, I was crying.
I was crying. And that was just from having to look at it. Oh, my God.
Right. And so I try to put myself back in that mindset and be like, okay, well, this is how Packers fans feel. And I you know, I know that we're coming at it from such a detached place. But there's more to life than football, and there's more to life. You can't let it truly have an effect on your mental health or day-to-day life. You have to just enjoy it or find something else to do, because why spend so much time on something that's just making you miserable? It's not worth it. That's my pep talk for the day for anyone.
That's called dating. Amy Trask got the nickname Queen of Darkness. I think we have to nickname you the Queen of Sunshine. That is what you are.
Which is so funny, because if you ask my husband or anyone who really knows me, I'm certainly not the sunniest person in the world. But, you know, at the end of the day, what else can you do? I mean, I think, you know, what else can you do?
I agree. That is as good a place as any to leave it. Michelle, thank you for being the first return guest on Locked On Packers, and I will be sure to intro you the next time that you do this as the Queen of Sunshine.
I love it. Perfect.
I want to thank Michelle again for joining Locked On Packers, our first return guest, the Queen of Sunshine. I like it. I hope she likes it. Ben Fennell is tomorrow to do the self-scout. Our opponent for Wednesday
will be the Green Bay Packers. If we were going to prepare for a game, how do we do that? Where do they need to get better? Where are they weak? What does this team do to move forward? We're going to get into that. And I encourage you, Michelle mentioned the article that I wrote about Dom Capers. Please go to the Acme Packing Company to read that. I have also am writing for this week about that drive that we talked about, that great drive. She loved it. I loved it. It was great. It is a glimmer of hope if you are a glass half full type person, if you are not the queen of sunshine. That this is what this offense could look like with Brett Hundley, given the right circumstances. And there's one play in particular that I'm going to highlight because they can come back to it, especially with the personnel that they have. So stay tuned for that. You have to be paying attention to Acme Packing Company for that. You have to be paying attention at Locked On Packers on Twitter, at Peter_Bukowski on Twitter. You have to be paying attention to that. And you know what else you have to do, don't you? You know. Come on. You have to stay Locked On Packers.
Insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.